I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Welcome to What's Next. Today, we have Buffalo's Poet Laureate with us, Itina Fareed-Cook. And of course, we've talked to Itina before, also known as AI, the Anomaly, her stage name as well. Itina, great to see you again.
It's good to see you again, too.
There's so much to talk about, of course. First of all, just talk about wearing the Poet Laureate name and responsibility. I know I got to see you do your work last week at Tops.
Yes.
For the 514 event. And obviously, there's a lot that goes into being Buffalo's Poet Laureate. So how's it been for you so far?
You know what? I would first want to give so much respect to Jillian Haynesworth, who really advocated for us in Buffalo to have this position. She really worked very hard and then went into the process and gave it all that she had. And then we got rocked with such a heavy circumstance within our city. And then she carried, she really carried us through literary arts, through poetry. And she did an excellent job and soared and is still soaring. Just won a sports Emmy.
Yes,
She definitely curated something special for our city. So I definitely want to give her respect as the first Poet Laureate of Buffalo. And then I'm honored to be in this position. You know, it's fitting. It makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Being that this is, I like to say, like, writing was my first love. As someone within this position, I'm honored that I was selected. I'm honored that I was chosen to take on this, opportunity. And it's a sacrifice that I take very seriously. And just being able to utilize those skill sets to uplift, but to also kind of push, and to also make people think. And like always, ignite thought, expand perspectives through the use of literary arts, through the use of this tool of poetry. So I'm loving it. I'm enjoying it. And I also know that it's going to be weighty as we go. I don't know what may happen within our city, but I have to be ready to deliver something that's going to touch the hearts of our citizens.
That's a heavy weight when you look at it like that. But I mean, I know your other work, and you've worked with other artists. You've helped uplift other artists as well. So carrying folks along is kind of part and parcel for you.
Yeah.
Let's maybe talk, if we can, just reflect a little bit about the 514 event at Tops. Wasn't as big as it was last year, but yet there was a very sizable community turnout for the event, and a lot was going on. But you had to, you were called upon to perform, give, I think, as you said, you wanted to give a hug to everybody that was there to a certain extent, but you had a serious responsibility because around you, you had the Attorney General from the state of New York, you had all sorts of elected officials with you, and of course, a community that was looking upon you at that time. So take us into what, not so much what you were thinking then, but as you were preparing to recite your piece that day.
Yeah. So first and foremost, like, the such a very heavy circumstance that happened to our city, one in which it's always difficult to kind of talk about because you're dealing with people who lost their lives for no reason, someone who came into our space and saw vulnerability and acted on that. And that's hefty. That's hefty. I remember the day it happened. It was actually my aunt's funeral.
Mm.
It was coming from my aunt's funeral when I found out that that happened. That's the same Tops that my mom goes to. My mom is 91 and will be 92. She adopted me and my sister and my brother. And so I was in fear of who is in Tops. Is it my mom? I serve within that community through my church. So is it the church members? Like who's being affected? You know, it was hefty and the whole community was affected. But then there's the families that were directly affected that lost their lives. And you have people who lost their mothers and grandmothers and great community members. A lot of those individuals we knew of through the church and relationships within the neighborhood. It was a terrible day. It was just a really rough day. Over the course of time, trying the best that we could do as human beings who care and love and are concerned about our communities, giving back in any kind of way. And then getting to this space where now I take on this role and then I have to speak in front of humans, you know, separate from titles and things like that. I'm just surrounded by human beings. I knew that it was going to be taxing on my heart because I know that people are hurting and angry and all of these different things. The words that I delivered were the words that are within that space, within the honor space. I was commissioned to write pieces for that honor space, and I chose to share those words with the community because the words that I wrote, it's a welcoming, but also a welcoming in a sense to this idea of release. Release yourself from the weight of trauma, at least for a moment, you know. Release yourself from the weight of trauma, because I know trauma is constant, it feels constant, to be honest. I wanted them to understand that, but I also wanted them to understand that they're already wrapped in royalty, like this is nothing new. You already have what it takes within in order to make change occur. And then also to remind people that what occurred was, it was a terrible crime. It was a terrible thing that occurred to our neighborhood. And that we, you know, we need constant change, but sustainable change, not a surface change. You know, something that's going to continue us on and to give us power and liberation more than just a band-aid and beautification, you know, even though those things are good as well. So there was a lot.
Sure.
There was a lot happening.
And maybe break that down just a little bit. Then, like you said, wrapped in royalty. And I do recall that as you say it now, I recall you also saying it at that time. Expand on that. What you wanted people to understand when you were talking about being wrapped in royalty.
Yeah, it means a lot of different things for me, in my perspective. I'm someone who has a very strong faith in God. And through that faith, I've learned and discovered through the historical document of the Bible that we come from a creator of all things. And if he is the omnipotent, omnipresent being who has created all these things, we come from a source of power and a source of royalty. And so that's our lineage, if you will. So that's from my perspective and in my opinion, that's where we come from.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to have that confidence. The other piece or the other side of it that I feel like most people can understand is that we tend to, so if I speak from my perspective, growing up in foster care, there was this weight of I'm not worth it. I'm not worthy. I'm forgotten. And unfortunately, the surrounding area spoke that same language.
Hmm.
At times within education, it kind of spoke that language with my peers and trying to fit in, trying to figure out, you know, who am I going to be? And there's this constant weight that I carried that, you know, I'm not going to be anything, you know, having the labels. And then realizing through having the, these abilities kind of given to me, if you will, or, you know, ignited through creative arts to realize, wait a minute, there's something that was already there that existed within me, you know, and I feel like that's that royalty, that's that gold, you know, that I really feel like I am worth it. I am someone. I should walk with confidence and authority in that because I'm human, just period, because I'm human. And the ideology that we aren't is something that I feel comes with the system that was created, you know. So when I said that, I wanted those that are within the atmosphere to understand, like, you're wrapped in royalty. You have the power to make change first within, and then whatever that change is, it should exude, it should bleed out. And if that's the case, if we get into the conversation of sustainable change, if we understand where we come from and whose we are and the royalty that we have, then we should be able to say, you know what, I'm going to take control over the things that I can take control over, and I can start to make some kind of change shake within my space. I don't want to ramble, but that's no, really literally how I feel.
I certainly appreciate, and I can, I have the pleasure to be sitting right across from you. I can see the emotion on your face as you're expressing that.
I really believe it.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Another emotion that we talked a little bit before we got on the air, and you mentioned how the community, and understandably so, still very angry about what happened 2 years ago. How are you sensing that? Are you seeing it? Are you seeing it easing up in any way, or maybe perhaps, maybe even getting a little more embittered, maybe understandably so?
There's a lot to be angry about. You know, imagine someone coming into your space. Well, first and foremost, imagine somebody sitting down and planning on coming to your space and doing research and developments and creating tactics and saving money, whatever the case was, whatever was done for the sake to cause harm to your family. Your family, and comes in and takes your family away from you. I would be angry. I would be frustrated. I would want to retaliate, you know. So it's a sensible anger. It's a natural anger. Emotions are natural. It's all about what you do with that anger. You know, how do you take that anger and use it in a way that creates, in my opinion, creates sustainable change? You're going to have to get it out some kind of way. You know, it shouldn't be violent, but sometimes it is. But yeah, I mean, people are angry, rightfully so. Rightfully so, you know. They're angry about a lot of things, not just what happened.
Sure.
But people have been angry before
May 14th, 2022. Yeah.
People were angry before that.
How you use the anger, I like that thought. And let's see if we can't expand on that. I mean, we most certainly have seen, especially in the months right after 5/14, a lot of people were active, very active. And then that, you know, and we can talk about what we saw on Jefferson Avenue. Yeah. There's all sorts of outpouring, and that was great in its way for sure. But what do you sense about the energy that toward change? Is that anger finding its way into there? And are we seeing, do you get a sense that, yeah, maybe this is coming? Maybe that change, again, it's going to be slower than anyone ever really wants it to be. But is there that sense? Because you would have a better sense of it than pretty much anybody I know.
Hmm. Is your question, do I see?
Do you feel that inside that you know, that emotion is being received and then being transferred into something that seems like it could be change, sustainable change?
Yeah. So I feel a lot of different ways about I'd say the conditions of not only Jefferson, but the conditions of a lot of spaces that have individuals who look like me, or who may come from impoverished spaces, who don't always look like me, you know, impoverished communities. It's just interesting how we call for change. We know we can get change. We know that it's possible because we've seen change in many different spaces.
Sure.
But why is the change not coming to these spaces?
Right.
You know, in the same level and effect as we see in other spaces. So one thing I do want to say, yes, like I said, there are people who are angry, people who were angry beforehand because they were screaming out for change and wanting change for years and decades, you know what I mean? And not seeing any change, rightfully so, to be angry. But then also you have to understand change is the modification, right? It's the altering. It's the transforming, you know. It just depends on like how deep is that change. There's some changes that happen that are more surface level, and then there's some changes that are more deeper. And the deeper, it takes time,
right?
You know, and then you have to dig at the fact that there are people, and entities, and organizations who have been in existence who have been trying their best to create sustainable change for years before the circumstance occurred. You know, you have a lot of different organizations within that community who has been, they've been working hard, and individuals as well. For me, if we look at the word change as modification, right, altering, transformation, there has been change in many different ways. My thing is, how do we create sustainable change, which I talked about?
Right.
How do we plant seeds and continue to water those seeds and then actually see growth and development and not just kind of talk about it and have fantasies about what it could be, or hopeful conversations about it. And then, so that takes a lot of work,
right?
You know, continuous work, you know, so yeah.
I feel like I'm taking you through it here, Itina, to start things off. Itina Fareed Cook with us, Buffalo's Poet Laureate here on What's Next. But I do appreciate it because, I mean, that is part of being an artist, right? I mean, that's a big part of it, is channeling emotions and probably feeling what's around you, right?
Absolutely. And then being able to translate that in whatever way possible for people to understand. You know, it's a language. Art is a language, and every medium is a different dialect. I choose this language of not only poetry, but photography, film, you know, dance, theater, music. It's all of it gives me an opportunity to speak. And for me personally, that's how I deal with the things that I'm angry about or frustrated about or bothered by, you know, that's how I deal with it. And then I speak about those things within those spaces. And then I try to teach other artists and also the community how to speak within those same languages, or find your own language, find your own art voice, if you will. But yeah, it's an ongoing process, you know, trying to process pain through the arts, and on top of all the other things.
And being a mother of two.
Mother and wife, and a business owner, and, you know.
I'm curious about your process, because like you said, you're involved in a lot of different art forms.
Yes.
And we hear from writers, writers might say, I have to write every day.
Yeah.
I have to do it every day. How about for you? I mean, when you're putting all these things together, and again, you also have business demands, mm-hmm. besides your demands as the poet laureate and the personal demands as well. Is that something that you have to commit to every day, to always be digging in there, uncovering things, finding new right. meaning?
Right. I'm a creative every day. Every single moment of my life, I'm creating. Right now, I'm creating ways to say what I need to say in the most graceful way I can.
And I appreciate
you
the gracefulness.
I'm thinking about that camera, and is the frame and composition the way that, you know, he wants it. I'm thinking about the audio production that needs to happen. I'm thinking about, you know, positioning. My mind is in a constant creative movement and dance and journey. That's just the way that I'm made up. I'm a creative everything, you know. That's
so you're
that's
constantly discovering.
I'm constantly discovering and constantly, you know, filtering things through my creative mind. I have a million ideas that go through my mind almost every day, and I have to, you know, filter that and calm myself down. And you know, I think the biggest thing with me is I have tons of parking lots with a lot of ideas in all of them, you know, just trying to figure out like, okay, I can't do this right now, but it'll come up later. You know, I have projects and ideas, and all of it at the end of the day is it's the same thing. Ignite thought, expand perspectives. And how do I utilize this creative essence to uplift and to help my community? How do I bridge the gap between the things that I see happening within my community and individuals that may not understand? How do I help my community understand financial literacy? How do I have them understand that you have to have, you know, delayed gratification so that you can hold on to your money? How do I have them understand to place your money into a money marketing account so that it can sit and mature? You know, how do I translate the things that I've learned throughout my life and being around successful business owners? How do I translate that to individuals who know nothing about it? Art allows me to do that. And so everything that I'm learning, I'm trying to find ways to translate it to my community so that they can excel in some way, shape, or form. You know, it's an ability that I love, but it's also it's burdensome at times. But I'm open to that burden. You know, there was a writer, there's a writer. His name is Paul, and he talked about is like a slave. You know, he says he's a slave to Christ. You know, which I feel as well. But like being this kind of slave to this. Creativity. It was what was given to me. It's my voice, you know. And he talks about how he's honored to be that. He finds joy. And, you know, even within the same book that he's in, it talks about counting it all joy when faced with diverse, you know, temptations or certain things that happen in life. My response to some of those things, or most of those things, is through this creative process. You know, even with my, you know, like I was talking about being a mother, and right now, that's what's new. Like, how do the creative problem solving process pushes you to ask questions? And so, even with this circumstance with my son and being 16 and he's trying to figure things out, in what ways can I encourage him to understand that I'm not his enemy? In what ways can I help him to understand that life is going to be tough and this is your training ground? You know, how do I utilize the things that he understands? How do I utilize music? How do I utilize, you know, art, because he speaks that language, you know? Or, you know, maybe I just need to tell you to go sit down. You need to go sit down somewhere. But I'm always moving through this creative problem solving process, and it's no different in any regard, whether I'm in the role as a wife. In what ways can I help my husband to understand my creative craziness? You know, as a mother, as a business owner, in what ways can I support the creatives that I work with and that I partner with? In what ways do I teach them and translate like business tactics and things like that? It's just all a creative process for me. I don't know any other way. This was given to me. And I choose to use it, you know, as best as I can.
We are talking with Itina Fareed-Cook today, Buffalo Poet Laureate, on What's Next. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with more. This is What's Next on WBFO.
Hey, educators. You've been asking for it, and it's here. Reading Rainbow Stories is ready to help your students stay on track. Each story is paired with activities to help students strengthen cross-curricular skills such as math and business in Lemonade for Sale.
Let's keep track of our sales.
Science and health in Germs Make Me Sick.
Usually, you feel better after a day or two.
Thanks.
But if you don't, you should see a doctor.
And history in Following the Drinking Gourd.
One of the worst things about slavery is that families were separated. Fathers, mothers, and children were oftentimes sold to different people.
Check out the new Reading Rainbow Stories collection on PBS Learning Media today to help your students stay on track.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And welcome back to What's Next. We continue our conversation with Itina Fareed-Cook, Buffalo Poet Laureate, also known, of course, as the artist AI The Anomaly as well. Sustainable change, that's a word that we used quite a bit in the first 20 minutes or so of this program. Mm-hmm. All right, you're somebody between your church, your work, all the different people you know in the community, you have a sense. So are you seeing those glimmers, things that might be seeds for sustainable change?
I believe so.
Okay.
I really do believe so, that there are things that are happening that I'm hopeful for. You know, it's I get nervous because, you know, as a teenager, you know, when I was a teenager, I went through a program that created change, and my life was transformed by it. Throughout that process, things fell apart, and then that program closed. And that was my first taste of, I was very discouraged, because the very thing that I felt like, man, this is what's waking me up in the morning, is giving me an opportunity to earn money for myself as a teenager. It took me out of town and I was able to see new things. And then all of a sudden, the money dried up and there was no more program. And the very individuals who are stepping out of gangs and, you know, all these different things, creating change for themselves, now they went right back to it. Mm. Those that didn't have the grit, if you will. I think a lot of times we see movement and we get excited and we're like, oh man, this is good. But in certain spaces, and people know what I'm talking about, certain spaces and certain circumstances, when you keep having individuals say, I'm going to do this and we're going to do that and we're going to make this happen and we're going to make that happen, and you see a little movement and then all of a sudden it just gets snatched up. That's happening too much in our community.
Okay.
So what I realized even at a young age is that there was not a contingency plan and there was no sustainability. And in order to have that, you have to sow seeds. Now, I see hopeful seeds being sown, which is, you know, the $3.2 million that was given. You know, 1.2 was given to Top Enterprises, I believe. 1 million was given to another organization, and another million was given to Buffalo Urban League. And these entities are calling for things that are very important to sustainable change. You're talking about, you know, if you deal with the five determinants to health, you're talking about education, you know, health, and I'm talking physical, mental. You're talking about environment, so making sure you beautify and take care of the ground that you're living in, community. And I always forget that last one. I always forget that last one. Knowledge.
Hmm.
No, that's education. That's so I'm forgetting it. So education.
Shelter? No.
Yes.
Shelter.
Housing. Yes.
Which is huge.
It's huge, yeah. Right? And so these kind of five things are very important to sustain change. You have to have good roots. It's back to what we talked about when it comes to nature. I pay attention to nature because it is our natural, you know, it's our natural teacher. If you watch it, you see how the earth, you know, cultivates. You see how soil does what it needs to do. The rain waters the earth, and that seed will emerge and it will grow into a tree, and you have fruit that bears or what have you. If you create sustainability in these areas, you create the society that you need. In this area of Jefferson, how is our education system? Right?
Right.
Is it sustainable? Is it giving our young people what they need in order to grow and mature into the individuals that we need for our future, to be future police officers, to be conscious and aware, but have restraint and know how to control their emotions and respond to certain things wisely? How are we dealing with our mental health and our physical health? What are we putting into our bodies? Because if our body is a temple and it's a source of certain good, if you will, if it's supposed to put out good, we have to watch what we're putting into our bodies, which means that we should have some kind of control over what we eat. And if we only have one grocery store and we don't have anywhere else to go to get groceries, and all we have is a couple of corner stores that have highly priced foods and foods that aren't that great, filled with red 40 that cause hypertension, filled with blue 6 and all of these colors and numbers, if you're putting that into your body and it's a known carcinogens and things like that, that's not sustainable. If you're talking about environment, if we're walking down the street, like the other day I walked down the street, I don't live on Jefferson, I live in another neighborhood on the east side of Buffalo. I'm walking with my daughter and I'm talking with her, but as I'm walking, I'm seeing trash.
Mm.
I'm seeing some homes that aren't that kept, you know, it's not nurtured. They're not caring for it. And it may be because maybe they're renters. And sometimes, you know, if you're a renter, you might not care as much, but some people who rent care about their homes. I've seen it. And there's different issues, disparities that we're walking past. And as I'm walking past this, I'm like, the environment causes something within us as well. It's a disparity that we see, and then we begin to have that within us. I remember growing up seeing a drug house across the street and a drug house next door, and that was normal to me, but that's not normal. We just tend to just accept it. Like, oh, you know, it is what it is. No, it is not. It's an issue that does not help sustain change. And so all of these factors, if you have these seeds of organizations that are already in existence, like the Apollo Media Center is there. The library, Frankie Merriweather Library, is there. The Challenger News, a staple organization and a help for within our community. You have Push Buffalo. You have the Beverly Gray, the Exchange Center, that's doing amazing, marvelous things to help entrepreneurs become financially fit, become financially aware, just business-wise. These are seeds that are planted into the ground within the east side of Buffalo. So there are things happening, but we as the community then have to water that. You know, we have to water it. We have to come together, and regardless of how we feel, regardless of our emotional state, regardless of the things that have happened decades ago, and I know it sucks, it's messed up, how Jefferson was just demolished, how it was, and then no one had the care or capacity to say, let's make change. Months after the riots.
Right.
Why do we have to wait so long? So I understand. But all at the same time, let us not lose hope. Like I said, you know, in that poem, Wrapped in Royalty, we have what it takes if we come together to water the seeds that are being placed into the ground.
You know, so it's obviously so hard to quantify something like this, for sure.
It is.
But like you said, the seeds are being sown. They need to be watered. Do you sense enough, and I'm going to call it institutional support, and institution can mean anything. Like you said, it could be a newspaper, it could be a library, mm-hmm. it can be government, it can be, mm-hmm. Obviously, churches, of course, a big part of
Absolutely.
It as well. But are they coming together? Is there that sense that everybody's kind of not necessarily on the same page, because everyone's going to have their own opinion about what sustainability and change looks like, but that, you know, this can happen, but we're going to stay the course. We're going to make sure that we stay the course, not just for the next year or the next 2 years, but down the line as far as it takes. Is there that sense?
For me, I feel like, I have no choice but to think in a way of there will be change and it will be sustainable as long as I have the control that I have from my piece of the puzzle. Everyone has a piece of the puzzle, so I'm a creative. I'm going to do whatever I can with the skills, talents, and abilities that I have to create change and sustain change. Not only within that front, but like you mentioned, churches. I'm a member of a church who for years, decades, who have been a staple within that community. My church exists about two blocks away from Tops, from Jefferson, realistically. And for the last 15 years, we've served our community through giving away food. Every Wednesday in the summer, we give away food. We give away clothes. We give away whatever we feel the community needs. When the community comes up, we're listening to them. We have an open space. You want to come in, you want to talk, you want to get prayer, whatever it is, whatever your needs are, because a lot of times it's the needs first before someone can hear, but then it's also the relationship. And during that time frame, you know, with the leadership of my pastor, Pastor Stephen Foreman Sr., he said, you know what? We're changing our space. Our sanctuary will now become a food distribution space. And we served over 800 bags of food and also other items for our community because we knew it was necessary. Everybody's going to do their part, which we saw, because that's what we do. That's what community does. You know, everywhere you, in my opinion, everywhere you go, at the end of the day, I think for the most part, people have good within them and they want good for other people. So they're going to make good as good as they can. And so if you play your position and play your role, but make sure you come together to get on the same page, I think that change can be sustained. I'm seeing seeds and I'm encouraged by those seeds, and I'm going to continue to do my part, you know, and then get involved in the things that I'm seeing. I'm seeing organizations. I'm like, I need to get more involved and see what's going on to understand. I think everyone has a personal responsibility to learn about what's happening in their surroundings. You know, back to the five determinants of health, one of them is education. In order for change that I want to see, I have to educate myself. I may not be deep into politics, but I have to educate myself so that I understand who's in charge, who's overseeing, who we put in charge, and how to hold them accountable and make sure we do, because that's part of the sustainable change as well. If you say you're going to do something for the community, do the thing you said you're going to do for the community. And if you're not, then we as the people need to hold you accountable. So that's part of it as well.
I want to flash back to, you brought up entrepreneurship. That's something that you've done for yourself, obviously, yeah, in your business. When did you have a sense at a certain time when, like, yeah, I can do this, or is it, I got no choice, I've got to do this?
Listen, like I said, like, that's why I'm a firm believer in, like, youth development organizations, not-for-profit organizations. I learned a lot going through this program, Yo Buffalo Youth Opportunity. I talk about it often because it did something to me. It planted a seed that was watered throughout time. They gave me that sense of I can, because they constantly drilled it into us, like, yeah, you can do this, you can do that. I learned about video productions and photography through that program. As a matter of fact, I was a student of Apollo Media Center.
Okay.
Right. So I learned about how to work with a team, how to work with a camera, how to work on a project, and then take on projects from organizations. I was about 16 taking on contracts from organizations and getting paid pretty good money at that time.
Right.
So I had this sense of entrepreneurship, like, wow, I can make money doing something I like to do. That's interesting. But also being fed, like, you got to get a job, you know, being a creative is not going to pay the bills, like, you got to get snap out of it. So I kind of put that on the back burner and came back to it saying, you know, well, I still love to do this and I can't really let it go. So I know that I can do it. I've been taught that. I've been mentored and ushered into this entrepreneurship, you know, space. So I'm going to go for it. You know, I think it was a matter of, I know that I can make a living off of what I love, and that is a risk, but everything is a risk. You know, having a 9-to-5 job and suppressing your creativity and who you are as a creative is a risk as well. You risk your happiness. We're all on this pursuit of happiness, right? And as an American,
right,
you know, so I want to pursue that. Now, it took a lot, you know, in order to get to a place where I'm 100% creative and earning a living, a sustained living, I might add. I don't know if people understand. It's a very financial, stable circumstance that I've been able to create for myself, me along with my husband, who, you know, works as a teacher and is an amazing teacher. But I wanted to be 100% creative, and it was taxing. I had to work the full 9-to-5 job on the side, you know, or have the business on the side, and 9-to-5 was the front,
yes,
focus.
Right.
But yeah, you know, throughout my what, now we're 12 years, you know, going on 13 years in business, been able to see a lot of expansion, a lot of growth. I went from just being a photographer to producing and directing, you know, projects and visuals, managing artists. I think we have about 12 to 15 artists that we're managing and helping them to realize their potential as artists as well, you know, and that they can make a sustainable, you know, change, if you will, for themselves as well. My whole hope is that, like, the way that I look at those that partner with us, you're an entrepreneur, you're not an employee. I want you to have control over what you do, and understand your intellectual property, and understand how to value what you do, and understand how to stand firm and be confident in that value. Why? Because I believe that if you build financial stability, then you have some power. If you have power, you can make change and you can sustain that change. And you have a say in what's going on within your community beyond just, you know, the hopeful wishing, you know. I went on and on.
I'm listening with rapt attention, and I think our listening audience as well. Let's take a one more time out, and we'll come back and finish up our conversation here with Itina Farid-Cook. This is What's Next on WBFO.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And welcome back to What's Next. We're talking with Itina Farid-Cook. Itina Farid-Cook is the Buffalo Poet Laureate. She's also known as AI, the Anomaly. We were talking about her entrepreneurship coming in to the break. And also you mentioned how you work with other artists as well. I was lucky enough when you opened up your work at Buffalo Arts Studio last year to see the opening night performance that you put on with your artists as well. It was a very powerful experience. That place was packed. And it was.
Can you believe they said it was about 700 people?
I totally believe it. I totally believe it.
It was wild.
It was a great night.
It was beautiful.
It was. Why is that important to you to bring these artists along with you?
Because it was given to me. I'm just giving back what was given to me because I think that's the way of life. You know, Sankofa, I think we call it, you know, just looking back, giving back, reaching back. And that's what I want my life to say, you know. That's just who I am. You know, I truly believe in investing in the next generation of creatives. If I'm a creative and that's just the way that I feel like my makeup is, then I need to teach the next generation, you know, how to utilize this creative voice and the power of that creative voice and how you can impact community through that. And so those in this framework, those particular artists were responding to the work that I did through Tales from the Porch,
right?
Which that 2022, you know, around that time frame is when we put on Tales from the Porch Part 2, where I focused on 7 Black leaders as a result of what happened and occurred on May 14th. I wanted to focus on individuals who were creating change well before that circumstance, and who I know and have confidence are going to continue to make change and are going to create ways to sustain that change. I wanted to amplify their voices through photography, poetry, video, and, you know, performing arts. And so myself and the rest of the crew went into the community and captured those stories. And so in the fashion of Get Focused Productions, we capture and then we teach.
Mm-hmm.
And so I taught, you know, a lot of different young artists, emerging artists, college students, adults, how to own their stories and share them and respond to the stories that I've created in order to create their own stories. And I chose 5 specific artists to create, you know, this opportunity for them to tell their porch stories or create space to create, you know, to showcase their porch stories, which was fantastic. They did a great job. Over the course of 6 months, they worked with not only myself, but the fierce women, the fierce women at Buffalo Art Studio.
Right.
That's a whole nother conversation.
Yes, it is.
They are something else. They are amazing at what they do. But they supported the artist as well throughout this process so that they could understand, you know, installing, understand the rollout plan. I had to really teach them to kind of step back and realize you have an idea. And that's great. But your idea is really, really large. And right now, you might not have the muscle to see that idea maturate. Not to say you can never, but right now, where you are, just it's not enough muscle. And so you have to grow more muscle in order to see that maturate in a different way. And so kind of scaling back, these lessons are very important for young artists to take on. It's stuff that I had to learn the hard way. I had to hit my head a lot of times. I had to lose and fail a whole bunch. And I want to teach them certain things so that they don't lose and fail like I did, but at the same time, just like parenthood, sometimes I have to just let go and let you just go ahead and bump your head. Right. So at least you feel it. And then realize, oh, shoot, that didn't feel good. And then you learn to not move in a certain way, you know. So I love that part of life, the education part. I love it. It's why I went and got a degree in science and education, right. My master's at Buffalo State University. It's why I invested time into that, you know, because I wanted to utilize that education in order to teach, you know, my community, young, seasoned, how to not only use the creative arts, but what to do when you become enlightened. You know, what to do when your perspective has opened up and you realize that's a drug house in front of me. That's a drug house next door to me. This is not good. I've just been dealing with it. So now what do I do? To realize, like, okay, I actually have a position to play. I can make something change within my surroundings. You know what I mean? That's what the hope is. That's how I use education to uplift and to hope, you know, the hope is to liberate, to set free.
We're coming down to just the last couple of minutes here with you, Itina. Mm-hmm. And back to the position of Buffalo Poet Laureate, you know, a lot of it, I mean, it's undefined what that position is. You mentioned very graciously about Jillian Hainsworth, who did her own unique performance in, or responsibility or effort. There's so many different ways about sacrifice. Toward, how about for you? How are you, I guess, maybe, you know, you're involved in so many artistic pursuits that maybe a lot of input is coming to you kind of naturally, I guess, but are... Do you find maybe more community members or other people, or you're just finding yourself in new spaces where you're getting new influences, new information, new creative input, I guess, is for lack of a better term?
Oh, always. Every day is a new opportunity to learn new things. Honestly, I've been around for some time, and a lot of the different individuals that I see are the same individuals I've seen throughout my life. Honestly, like when I was going to Yale Buffalo, like, you know, I'll shout out Oswaldo Mestre. He was one of my mentors growing up. Like, he saw me grow, you know, the different individuals, even Crystal Rodriguez, who used to be the deputy mayor. She was, as a matter of fact, she's one of the ones that will asked me to come speak some time ago, like 2008, 2009. I would come and I would prepare, you know, speeches at City Hall for certain moments in time and different events.
So you're being prepared for this spot a long time ago.
It's like a full circle, which is beautiful, you know. So I've seen a lot of these individuals, you know, Otis Barker, you know, who really was a influence on me growing up. And so being able to just come back or see people in different, you know, spaces and different seasons, even before I took this role on, you know, it's beautiful. You know, it's Buffalo, you know, I've been around for a little bit.
And Buffalo is beautiful.
It is. It definitely is beautiful. I mean, I remember back when Mayor Masiello. I mean, back then. Yeah, I might be dating myself now.
You're a little bit. That's all right, though.
But
you'll never date yourself as old as I am, so that's okay.
As long as I look like I'm, you know, 18, 20.
Yes, you continue to give away your age here, Itina.
I know. Oops.
Yeah. That's okay.
But yeah, I look to do what I've been doing, you know, since I realized what my purpose was, and that is really to ignite thought and expand perspectives, to bridge the gap between creative arts and community, to help my community through the creative arts, you know. That's why I deem myself as the creative arts strategist, because I'm just using strategies to really help uplift my community.
It sounds like the position has found you, or you have found the right position as both Buffalo Poet Laureate. That's for sure. Yeah. Tina, always appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Great having you here. I said this before we went on the air. I said, we could probably have you come back in 2 weeks. You could tell us something. There's going to be something new every 2 weeks.
I know. That's life.
That is life. Tina Fareed Cook is the Buffalo Poet Laureate and also well known as AI, the Anomaly. And is it Get Focused Productions?
Get Focused Productions.
Yep. All can find out for yourself online.
Yes.
This has been, first, and of course, thank you for being with us on this hour of What's Next.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, Tina Fareed Cook with us. This has been What's Next on WBFO.